This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, we have a big day today. There's an awful lot in the news. I have a custom-made rant just for you about Nancy Pelosi as president, and I'll just leave it at that for the moment. Cole Stangler is going to be with us in just a moment from Paris on the Yellow Vest Movement. In the second hour of our program, Congressman Ro Khanna will be here for the full hour taking your calls. In the third hour of our program today, Dr. Stephanie Kelton will be here on the Green New Deal, she with modern monetary policy. We've got some really shocking information about what's driving the fall in stocks. We'll get to that. In fact, I think we'll get to that this hour. Donald Trump, some of his corrupt practices. It looks like he stole over a million dollars from his donors, amazingly enough. Some information about Nick Ayers. Today is the deadline for net neutrality. Nursing while black. I mean, there's just a whole pile of stuff here that we're going to be getting to. But I want to start out with Cole Stangler. Cole is the Paris-based journalist and contributor to both The Nation magazine and Jacobin, among others. His website, Cole Stangler, STANGLER.com. And you can tweet him at Cole Stangler. Cole, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for joining us from Paris. So you are there, you live there, you speak French, you have some sense of what's going on. I have read, you know, in the kind of mainstream media, I'm reading that the Yellow Vest Movement is all about, we don't want to pay for a gas tax. But in Louise and I were watching France 24 over the weekend and BBC, because you just can't get news in America on the weekends. And in both cases, they were talking about people were basically protesting the fact that the rich are getting richer and working people are getting poorer. And, you know, it's not just the gas tax. It's basically they're protesting neoliberal economics. So what say you, Cole?
So it's true that this movement really started over the fuel tax. So you had anger mounting over the summer. Fuel prices have actually gone up pretty substantially in France, about 25% over the last year. You had a call to protest on November 17th. So a big day of action to protest against taxes, against the fuel tax. This is something that really affects working people. If you do the math, you know, a gallon of fuel in France comes out to over $6 per gallon. So it's a really significant cost on people's lives. 25% increase over the last year. In addition to that, the government wanted to apply this 10% increase effective 2019. So you had this initial call to protest over the fuel tax, calling for the government to drop this fuel tax increase. However, it's clear that since that first day of protest on November 17th, where you had over 200,000 people coming out across the country, since that first day of protest, this movement has really come to encompass a much broader discontent with Emmanuel Macron and a much broader frustration with really the rising cost of living. You know, working class people in France say, why should we be, you know, expected to pay another 100 euros or so per month in gas, while at the same time the super rich are getting this massive tax cut? That's one of the landmarks of Emmanuel Macron's presidency so far, is cutting taxes for the super rich. So you have this trigger of the gas tax, but it's clear that we're at the moment now where it's a much bigger movement that is really articulating a deep discontent with the president and the way that he treats working class people.
You know, there is a system or a method or whatever policy that has been widely applauded, in fact, to raise gas taxes in a way that wouldn't produce this kind of blowback. And it's called fee and rebate, which is where you raise the taxes, but 100% of that money gets recycled back to people in the bottom 80-90%. And so, yeah, the gas tax might go up 25%, but, you know, you're going to get $100 a week or a month check from the government or something like that. Has there been any discussion about fee and rebate there?
That's not a policy I've seen floated in at the moment, but, you know, I think it's important to point out here because it really raises the question, you know, when you talk about opposition to the fuel tax, I think, you know, especially if you're sitting in the United States, you see this protest, I think it's very easy to transplant, you know, you're kind of, you know, especially right-wingers, this kind of anti-government, you know, Tea Party-esque kind of ideology onto the protesters. But I think it's important to point out the kinds of people that are protesting here, you know, they're not protesting against the idea of intervention in the economy. They're not protesting against the idea of the state trying to address the environmental crisis. What they're protesting is the fact that it should be done on the backs of the working class alone, that
right.
it should be in the backs of regular people. The idea is, why shouldn't the rich be expected to pay for this? We're the ones that are being asked to pay for this transition, that are bearing the costs of your policies.
Yeah,
and that's the real important point here.
Yeah, at the same time that Macron is doing the classic neoliberal trick of, you know, massive tax cuts and deregulation for the billionaires, the big corporations, and cutting social services and suppressing wages for average working people, and now hitting them with a 25% increase in fuel taxes on top of that. How do you think this? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, this is a movement that's also sprung up from parts of French society that are not accustomed to protest. That's why I think it's captured so much attention in France. It's also why the government has actually conceded on this initial demand about canceling the fuel tax. They've actually now canceled the fuel tax increase, a 10% increase for 2019. It's conceded. It sparked a lot of fear, and that's because this is coming from people that are not your typical, you know, left-wing or labor demonstrators. These are coming from people that live outside of major cities. That's the first point. Coming from rural areas, coming from what in France is known as the peri-urban areas. So these are basically, outskirts of suburbs that transition between, you know, rural areas and more suburban areas. These are coming from people that are not terribly political. And I think that's what has people frightened. And this is the backlash against,
right.
Macron's first year in office.
And those are the areas where people would be more likely to have a long commute to work because, you know, they're not living in the city center. Although France does have a pretty good public transportation system. But I'm curious, this is my understanding is, Cole, we're talking with Cole Stangler, the Paris-based journalist for The Nation and Jacobin. My understanding is that this was, to a large extent, organized on social media, specifically Facebook. Do I have that right? And has there been any evidence? I mean, we're seeing here in the United States now that, 21 out of 22 million comments or something like that to the FCC saying blow up net neutrality were entirely coming from bots, apparently corporate bots. And we're totally faked. Is there any evidence that social media has been manipulated in a way that might make these demonstrations worse than or larger than otherwise expected?
We've seen speculation about that. I haven't seen any conclusive evidence, to really convince me that's the case. There was a BuzzFeed piece recently that made the connection between Facebook and the protests. It is clear, though, that this protest was organized mostly on Facebook and social media. That's why it's so remarkable. That's why it's also very messy. That, we shouldn't, romanticize this too much. You have some real progressive demands that are being circulated among these Facebook groups. And again, no, real lack of structure here as well, which is, again, why it's so fascinating and kind of frightening.
There's the French equivalent of the Black Bloc that is participating in this, and perhaps even the French equivalent of the Proud Boys, that both the left wingers who like to smash the windows of fancy stores and the right wingers who like to go out and turn it into anti-immigrant stuff in their respective spheres have been doing this. Are those roles being exaggerated by the media, particularly here in the United States? Is that actually a real phenomenon?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that you do have groups of the far right and you have kind of extreme anarchists as well that have come to the demonstrations, mostly in Paris. Again, I think it's important to emphasize Paris is the center of media attention in France. It's also the center of attention, from abroad. And that's what gets the attention. But if you look at the rest of the country, Paris, you had, 10,000 demonstrators this most recent Saturday. You had, tens of thousands of other demonstrators across the country where you don't have these incidents taking place. You don't have as much of the violence. So you do have the far right. You do have some anarchists taps into it. But by and large, the supporters of this movement, the people that are coming out of protest, are tend to be not very political people, and that's why this is such a unique movement here.
Absolutely fascinating. Cole Stangler, the Paris-based journalist, contributor to The Nation and Jacobin. ColeStangler.com is his website. You can tweet him at Cole Stangler, STANGLER. Cole, thanks so much for dropping by today and laying all this out for us.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Great. It's always great talking with you, Cole, and keep safe. Merci. Thank you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're going to do a deep dive into the news here when we come back. Stick around. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Chuck Butler writes a newsletter for Aiden Forecast. AidenForecast.com is one of, they're a sponsor of our program, or at least they were. I'm not sure that they still are, but in any case, you know, we've, but I've subscribed to their newsletter for probably close to 20 years now, and, or at least 15 years. And I, you know, I get this newsletter every day, and Chuck pointed out a number of things that I just wanted to share with you that I think are worth noting. You know, we're watching the stock market drop, and people are wondering, well, what's going on? You know, is this the sugar high from the tax breaks wearing off, or is this just a normal, you know, cycle in capitalism, or, you know, are there actual structural deficiencies? Now, in my book, The Crash of 2016, which really should have just been titled The Great Crash because, you know, here it is, I think, or we're on the doorstep of it within the next year. In that book, I laid out how basically in 2008, well, in 2009, after President Obama came to power, you know, was inaugurated, and set about fixing our economy and putting us back on track, that what had precipitated this in 2007 was massive corporate debt that was highly leveraged, and the inability of the Fed to drop interest rates far enough and fast enough to make up for the loss of what's called liquidity, that is available credit in the marketplace. So Chuck starts out talking about how consumer debt now here in the, well, first of all, that the stock market lost $1 trillion last week. And it looks like it's you know, going to continue that this week, or at least today. Lost $1 trillion in wealth last week, which means that, you know, that small portion of the stock market, you know, the 5 or 10% that is literally working people who are, you know, have their IRAs or their 401ks in there, they are less wealthy than they were. But it also means that a lot of these big corporations that have been financing their debt with stock, their stock is not worth as much, and so the corporations are in trouble. We'll get to that in just a second. Consumer debt in November exploded by $25.4 billion. Consumer debt exploded by $25.4 billion. That was just in November, last month. That's like, you know, basically credit card debt. The annualized consumer debt has now reached $3.9 trillion. That's 7.7% higher than last year. And, you know, this, we're in the same territory we were in 2007. Meanwhile, the way that the Fed responds to a crash, to a recession, is by dropping what's called the Fed funds rate. In other words, dropping interest rates. So it's cheaper to borrow money, both for businesses and for individuals. So people borrow money and pump that money back into the economy, and that stimulates the economy, right? It's real simple. But in order to do that, the Fed funds rate, that is the interest rate, has to be high enough that the Fed can drop it. On average, before every recession since 1960, or excuse me, since the 1940s, the average has been around 6.5%. So that's a lot of territory that the Fed can drop interest rates to throw money into the economy, right? But right now it's at 2.25%. That means that the Fed has no space to work around this. Meanwhile, billions of dollars are flowing out of these bond or these ETFs, these electronic, exchange traded funds. Billions of dollars are flowing out of the ETFs that have to do with corporate debt. In other words, the market is starting to freak out. We're seeing the same stuff we saw in late 2007, in my opinion. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, over the weekend, since Friday, basically, here's some of the things that we have learned. We have learned, and a lot of this came out Friday afternoon after the show was off the air, we have learned that according to the prosecutors from the Southern District of New York, it's not alleged that Donald Trump participated with Michael Cohen in an illegal scheme to defraud Republican primary voters and ultimately all American voters of the knowledge that he had had affairs, the Stormy Daniels, a one-night stand, the Karen McDougal lasted over a year. This was in the year immediately following the birth of his son, Barron, and who I think is now 11 or 12, something like that, that he covered these things up. He directed Michael Cohen to do so. He gave him the money to do so. And And it's not just Michael Cohen saying this, that the prosecutors have independent corroborating evidence. So they didn't come out and say, maybe Trump did this, or it's alleged that Trump did this. They just came out and said Trump did it. That in and of itself, in addition to being a violation of campaign finance law and a felony violation, a go-to-prison violation, excuse me, that is also fraud. It's fraud on the American people. It's a fraud that is worthy of impeachment. So we learned that. The other thing that we learned from the filings, and this came out of the filings, I believe, from the Mueller investigation, was that the Trump Tower in Moscow that Trump was working on was going to produce, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars, end quote, in revenue for the Trump organization. Now that, and it would be just basically free money because they were not talking about building the building. That was going to be done by Russian oligarchs that Trump was in business with. It wasn't, they weren't talking about owning the building. That would be done by Russian oligarchs that Trump was doing business with. It wasn't, they weren't talking about paying for the building. That would be done by, I think it's VBE Bank, a Russian bank, which is under U.S. sanctions. Now, the way that Trump's business model works is you build the building, you finance the building, you run the building, Trump puts his name on it, and you pay Trump a fee for putting his name on it. He has no risk. He has no money at risk. He has, you know, everything's cool, right? Everything's good. He just gets money from it. And it would be hundreds of, this would be the largest deal that Trump has ever done, apparently. And he hid it from us. He concealed that. He was continuing to negotiate this right up until June or July of 2016, when, you know, kind of early word of it leaked and he put it on pause. Presumably put it on hold until right after the election when he would lose the election and then go ahead and build his Trump Tower in Moscow. But of course, first he had to get the sanctions dropped on VBE Bank, which might have something to do with why the GOP platform was changed. Now, you know, it's hard to explicitly blame Russia for this. I mean, here you had Trump, they're sitting there going, okay, we're under sanctions, and we would like the sanctions lifted. And then here comes Trump saying, hey, I can get the sanctions lifted. Just let me build a hotel. Okay, let's go for it, right? I mean, you know, this just kind of makes sense at a certain level. So here we have this clear evidence of two examples of a massive fraud against the American people. There is no way that the Republican Party, the Republican primaries, would have made Donald Trump their nominee. Keep in mind, the Access Hollywood tape didn't come out until the general election. That came out when Trump was running against Hillary Clinton. Republicans, you know, they still consider themselves fundamentalist Christians. There's no way Trump would have become the GOP nominee if the word about his year-long affair with Karen McDougal and his affair with a porn star, Stormy Daniels, had come out. Wouldn't have happened. It would have been Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton versus somebody else. And Hillary Clinton probably would have won against a conventional Republican nominee. So number one, there was that fraud against the Republicans in the primary. Number two, the fraud against the American people with regard to all this Russia stuff, plus the Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels stuff. So in my opinion, just these two things that we learned on Friday, and these are not speculation, these are actual charges, assertions, are enough to impeach Trump. So what about Mike Pence? Mike Pence was in charge of the transition. Mike Pence was in tight on all this stuff. If there is even the smallest amount of evidence that Mike Pence knew about either of these crimes, we should impeach and remove from office both Donald Trump and Mike Pence, which means that you get President Nancy Pelosi. Can we work on that? Do you know anything about Mike Pence's involvement in any of this stuff that might make him impeachable as well? There's so little on the record. And then this guy Ayers, Nick Ayers, I think his name is, who's Pence's chief of staff, he's running back to Georgia now. Why? Because he's got tens of millions of dollars. The guy's 34, 36 years old, something like that. He's got tens of millions of dollars that he made running political campaigns over the last decade. How do you make tens of millions of dollars as a campaign consultant? I mean, typically campaign consultants are paid $250,000 a year, $500,000 a year. Maybe if you're Karl Rove, $1 million. This guy is like worth $30, $40, $50 million. There's some debates about it, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And he made it all, I mean, he came from a middle-class family, he made it all running Republican campaigns. I'm guessing that he doesn't want the job of Trump's chief of staff because he himself is corrupt. After all, he's a Republican. So is it time to have President Nancy Pelosi? Do you think this could work? Would you like to see President Nancy Pelosi? What, you know, what are your thoughts on the crimes of Mike Pence, other than being, you know, basically totally unqualified for the job? I mean, basically, you know, he was governor of Indiana for a while. Before that, he was a right-wing talk show host. And a shill for the tobacco industry, actually. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It is absolutely vital that we impeach Pence along with Trump so that we get President Pelosi, in my humble opinion. What do you think? Welcome back, Tom. Tom Hartman here with you. Last Charles Blow writing about our criminal president. He says, last year, one of the president's lawyers went even further, claiming that the president cannot obstruct justice because he's the chief law enforcement officer and has every right to express his view of any case. Right. Thomas Paine pointed out, in America, the law is king. For as in absolute governments, the king is law, so in free countries, the law ought to be king and there ought to be no other. Donald Trump is a criminal. Prosecutors made it clear in the sentencing memo on Michael Cohen that Trump had directed Cohen to break campaign finance laws. This is a crime. I mean, it's just that simple. John in Portland. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hello. Big fan. Listen to you all the time. And I'm lucky enough to listen to you all day, like your whole 3 hours.
Well, thank you, John.
Talking about Nancy Pelosi as president and with the economy on its way down and crashing, do you think that maybe once it hits rock bottom, they'd be like, you know what, maybe we should impeach this guy. And, Pence too. And now the Democrats own it.
Yeah.
And maybe they're just waiting for it to hit rock bottom before they give it back to us like they normally do.
Well, I'm not sure it's so much that they're waiting for it to hit rock bottom as... I think you're confusing cause and effect. What happens when the economy goes in the tank? The people tend to turn against the existing administration. If the economy had not gone so far down so fast and so badly in 2008, there's a strong argument to be made that John McCain would be president right now. Instead, because the economy was collapsing, voters said, okay, let's try the Democrat, and they went with Barack Obama. Even though he was black and his middle name was Hussein, which caused all the Republicans to giggle gleefully and think there's no way this guy's going to get elected, but he did, and it worked out pretty well for us. But the point is that people blame the existing administration for when the economy tanks, and they reward the existing administration for when the economy does well. And that's why the Republicans are, that's why, you know, Trump is freaking out. He's just sitting around watching the stock market. It's down 338 points right now and going, this is not good. This is not good for my reelection. And he is of the personal opinion that he needs to be reelected in order to stay out of prison, that as long as he's in the White House, they can't put him in jail, which may or may not be the case. So
we can only hope for the best.
There you go. But the other thing, John, that I thought was interesting is on Twitter, a couple of people, you know, tweeted,
the smocking gun?
Yeah, no. Stoner Man says not till after Trump. That was another one. That was a different story.
The smocking gun.
Pax on Your House says, my preference would be the whole administration be considered null and void. If putting Pelosi in office is a result of that, then yes, I agree. Barbara Doucette says, I agree with President Pelosi as an interim till we have new elections. But here's the good one. This is Resistance Stevie tweets, I say yay to President Pelosi, and she can appoint Hillary as Speaker. You don't have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House. So lots of possibilities here, John. John, thanks a lot for the call.
The future is bright. Thank you very
much. Yeah, thank you. Good talking with you. Sheena in Prairie Grove, Arkansas. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, Tom. Hi.
Hi.
Well, you your comment just took my thunder. I totally agree with the option of Nancy Pelosi being president, and I think it would be hilarious if she stepped down and appointed Hillary Clinton.
As Speaker of the House. Or as Vice President.
As President.
You know, she could also appoint Hillary as Vice President, and then she could resign the next day.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be...
That would be incredible,
great.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be karma in action.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as much as I was a Bernie fan until the primary, but once Hillary won the primary, then, you know, I was gung-ho for Hillary. And I think that, you know, she is actually the rightful president of the United States. If it had not been for Donald Trump's frauds, Hillary Clinton would be president of the United States. So, you know.
Yes, and, you know, I love when you termed it election fraud. And I started to notice a little bit now on MSNBC and stuff, they're starting to say election fraud.
Yeah, because it is.
You were spot on.
Yeah, this is not voter fraud. There's no such thing as voter fraud. This is election fraud, which the Republicans have been engaging in for, you know, several decades. I mean, going back to the 60s, actually, is when Rehnquist...
They're finally starting to shine a light on it, and I love that progressive Democrats, that's in their top three.
Yeah.
Things to fight, and I think that's wonderful. They're on the right track.
I agree. Shana, thanks so much for the call. I totally agree with you. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
The Republicans are never going to let that happen, and I think what would happen realistically is that if it ever got close to Pence being implicated with the real possibility of being impeachment, they would tell him, you've got to resign, just like Spiro Agnew had to resign.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to put some clean guy in there as a temporary VP. Trump will be gone. Let's say there's no doubt that, you know, it'll be impeachment, although he'd have to weather, the Dems would have to overcome somehow opposition in the Senate. But just let's say that go through. You're going to have a careholder Republican, a placeholder rather, Republican VP in place until the 2020 election.
Right, sort of a Jerry Ford scenario.
Jerry Ford was, you know, rather benign, kind of goofy. You know, they're not going to want to get anybody controversial in there, but somebody quiet is just going to sign their bills at least as much as they can ram through. But I think it's a little bit crazy, in my opinion, to at least encourage people into thinking that a Nancy Pelosi presidency is possible. They are never going to let it happen. They hate women. They hate powerful women. And my God, if you mentioned Hillary Clinton in there, it's going to get really insane. So,
but on the one hand. On the other hand, we only need either 7 or 8 Republican senators to be so horrified by what Trump has done and what Pence has done, assuming that we can demonstrate that Pence is complicit in it. We only need 7 or 8 of these senators to say, okay, we'll join the Democrats and vote these bums out. If the truth comes out, I mean, if it's as bad as it looks right now, and it looks like it's going to get a whole lot uglier, by the way, because Mueller's got several other independent investigations going on that he's not leaking a word about.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that we're gonna hear the treason, the T word, treason, a whole lot, and maybe coming out of Republicans' mouths. In fact, this might be. See, right now the Republican Party is torn in half between the Trump faction and the kind of, you know, classic Reagan, whatever you want to call it, you know, corporate function, and they're almost at war with each other. And I suspect that there are, I don't know, I'd have to do a kind of a whip count of all the Republicans in the Senate, but if there are, you know, 7 or 8 kind of John McCain Republicans, Ben Sasse appears to be positioning himself as one of those guys right now. I think, obviously, because he wants to be president one day. But, you know, they may say, okay, here's our chance to de-Trumpify the Republican Party. And putting Nancy Pelosi in as president by impeaching both Trump and Pence, actually, many of them would see as a good thing, because they know that the Republican Party does not work well when it governs. They only work well. It only gets the support of people, and they can only successfully raise money and things and mobilize voters when they have an enemy. They run on grievance. They've got nothing to offer the American people policy-wise. We've seen that for 2 years now, other than tax cuts for billionaires. So I think that some of those guys may well think, you know, having this hated woman, powerful, all the things that you just described, Kathy, would totally jack up the Republican base and would thus be a good thing for them in 2020?
Well, let me just say, one of the things about 2020 is that apparently there's going to be a lot more vulnerable Republicans in the Senate than there were in the past midterm.
Yes.
In 2018. So what you're saying, yeah, that's possible too. I just think that they are so corrupt and so beholden. It's all about their corporate donors. You know, you talk about that extensively.
Right. Their corporate donors wanted deregulation and a massive tax cut for billionaires, and they got both of those things.
All of it. They've gotten all of it. Well,
yeah.
maybe they'll back off for a while and let the rest of the country breathe, but
We'll see. I haven't seen any evidence of that so far. Kathy, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Lewis in Chicago, listening on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Hey, Lewis, what's up? Says here you disagree with me.
Hey, morning. Oh, sure do. Let's start with when Obama failed to report $2 million in campaign finances.
We're not talking about Obama, Lewis. He's not in office anymore. We're talking about Donald Trump and the crimes that he committed in order to get into office.
It's part of the discussion.
No, it's not.
Campaign finance fraud.
If you want to call up and yell about Obama, you know... I do it someplace else. This, you know, if you have something to say about whether you think that Donald Trump broke the law, go for it, Lewis.
Talk stupid all you want. You've made me laugh this morning, but it's not a criminal offense for what Trump has done. It's just that simple.
Then why is Michael Cohen going to prison for it? Then why is Michael Cohen going to prison for it?
Michael Cohen is going to prison for his tax stuff.
No, he's going to prison. He was charged on Friday with a 5-year felony of campaign finance fraud, and the charge specifically says not that Cohen asserts that Trump told him to do it, but that the prosecutors have evidence that Trump told him to do it. Lewis, your guy's going down. I'm sorry to tell you. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. Lori in Marble Hill, Missouri. Hey, Lori, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV.
Well, hello. How are you, Tom? I am just enjoying your shows, as I always do. Comment. If I'm not mistaken, 60 senators need the vote.
66. 66. 60? Yeah, so actually my math is off. We would need, 15, we'd need 17 Republicans. I was saying
right.
Seven, I was
and,
wrong.
Boy, Mitch McConnell is this boulder.
Yeah, did you see where he took $3 million from Russian oligarchs?
Yes. You know, the whole place is just rat infested.
Yeah.
But I was reading a really good article in the recent New Republic that said that what the Democrats now need to do is concentrate on the agenda of the progressive Democrats, because that's who is now in power in Congress.
Yeah.
And one of the big ones is don't compromise with any of the opposition.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, move forward stodgily and not get distracted. Yeah, go for it. You know, hang the guy high, but...
Metaphorically speaking, politically speaking, yes.
Yeah, politically speaking... But keep your eye on the ball, which is winning the White House, and it may be keeping to the agenda of fixing this country rather than, you know, impeaching the president. I'm going back and forth.
Except
on that,
as long as Trump is in the White House, any effort to fix the country will be vetoed.
Well, yes, but if he thinks that if he gets a win, like he passes a bill that the House has in Pelosi's house, mm-hmm. then he could take the credit and look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this article in the New Republic says. Don't do this. Don't pass.
Right.
Don't legislate anything to make this guy look good.
Yeah. We talked about this last week, Laura. I think that the strategy that the Democrats should employ is passing basically placeholder bills, pass literally a Medicare for All bill. Pass Wall Street reform. Pass literally massive tax increases on the very rich. None of this stuff will get through the Senate. But it's a way of saying to the American people, if you elect us in 2020, this is what we'll do.
Yeah, so what's the strategy to get Mitch McConnell over to get those 15 Republicans to impeach? I mean, I don't see it. It's hard. They're so corrupt. I just can't see them folding for, you know.
Well, there's going to be, I think it's 16 or 18 Republicans. I'll have to double check, but I think it's 16 or 18 Republican senators are up for re-election in 2020. And it's the kind of the reverse of the Democratic map from the last election.
Right.
So
right.
You've got all these vulnerable. Many of them are in states where, you know, in this last election we saw Republican districts flipping Democratic at the level of the House of Representatives.
And so maybe those are the people we should target as far as impeachment.
That's
just
right.
Really hammer at them.
That's right. This is the way to keep your Senate seat. Is to challenge the president and repudiate Trumpism and instead embrace John McCainism, essentially, you know, the modern day kind of semi-moderate Republican position. And the way you do that is by bouncing out Trump and Pence and giving yourself an enemy in Nancy Pelosi. I don't know. We'll see. Lori, thank you for the call. It's going to be interesting. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, a heads up. Today is the last day that Congress can repeal the destruction of net neutrality. Excuse me. I thought I pushed the button and I didn't. My apologies. Today is literally the last day that the Congress can use what's called a discharge petition. That is where enough members of the House of Representatives sign off on a discharge petition that it would force a vote. That time I hit the button. And so anyhow, I'm going to be talking about that a little more later on in the program. But today is a good day. There's a bunch of Democrats who are not on board with this, who are not supportive of net neutrality because they're taking money from the telecom industry. And if one of these Democrats represents you, please call them today and say, please get on board to save net neutrality. Brandon Boyle from Pennsylvania, Robert Brady from Pennsylvania, Butterfield from North Carolina, Cartwright from Pennsylvania, Quaylar from Texas, Costa from California, Evans from Pennsylvania, Gottheimer from New Jersey, Gonzalez from Texas, O'Halloran from Arizona, Green from Texas, Schneider from Illinois, Scott from Georgia, Vela from Texas, Sinema from Arizona, Viklosky from Indiana, Scanlon from Pennsylvania. These are the Democratic senators who are not supportive of net neutrality, who you should be calling right now if you happen to live in one of their districts. Gil in Battleground, Washington. Hey, Gil, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I wanted to hear what you think of the following. What if Trump in the 2020 election says that there's a problem with the election, so he suspends the elections so that he remains president using a national security issue?
Right.
And the Republicans who fear losing seats, if the elections are broadly suspended, they get to keep their seat. So he's got the Republicans to protect him in an impeachment proceeding. And he remains president, and the longer he remains president, the safer he is
right.
As far as charges.
See Erdogan, see Orban, see Hitler, see Mussolini, absolutely. That's the thing that wakes me up in the middle of the night, Gil. And the fact that this is essentially what Republicans are doing right now in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and what they did 2 years ago in North Carolina, lends a lot of credibility to your theory. And it's another thing that we need to be just hyper-vigilant about. I mean, because if he were to try something like that, there would be a huge blowback, but then, there would probably also be people in the streets, and the first time a window gets smashed, boom, there's your excuse for a state of emergency and the suspension of elections. I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think that's a scenario that could play out, but I didn't think Donald Trump would become president. Well, actually, I suspected that he was... You know, at various times in the 2 weeks before the election, I said, it's either going to be Trump. No, it's going to be Hillary. Yeah, it's going to be Trump. But I don't know. I can't say no, Gil, and that really troubles me. Gil, thanks for the call. George in Chicago. Hey, George.
Hi, Tim. Just for the edification of the fulminating Trump troll it called earlier, if there was some $2 million violation by Obama, the Republicans, who have full control of the federal government for the last almost 2 years, could have indicted him by now, and they didn't.
Not just could have, would have.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still investigating Hillary's emails right now in the House of Representatives.
Exactly.
That was Comey's testimony last week.
Right. The main thing I'm calling about is that if we're talking about succession of the speaker to the presidency, the Republicans got some cards to play here, too. Mm-hmm. I think we both agree that the Republican Party is no longer a party as we have understood parties in our past. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of a bunch of corrupt billionaires.
Yes.
And I don't doubt that they're starting to discuss ways and means of getting out from under Trump and Pence before it's too late. There's a simple way to do that. They just have to lean on the two of them real hard and say, you guys got to go. Trump, you pardon yourself, you pardon Pence, you resign. Pence, you become president, you pardon yourself, you pardon Trump, you resign. Speaker Ryan then becomes president for the next 2 years, and they can save what they can save of their agenda.
But they'd have to do it before January, whatever it is, 2nd or 5th or whatever.
Well, they've got 3 weeks to do it. That's plenty of time.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, George. We'll see. I totally agree with you, though, that the in all probability, if not the Koch brothers, and certainly their senior political leaders, and that of Shelley Adelson, and that of Robert Mercer, and that of the other, you know, politically active right-wing billionaires, are sitting down right now and game theorying this thing, you know, gaming this all out. So we'll see where it goes. George, thanks for the call. Deborah in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Deborah. Deborah? No, Deborah. Okay, let's try Bill in Langdon, North Dakota. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom.
You're on the air, Bill.
All right, I got a few things I want to mention. I was wondering if, because I was kind of inspired of your program on Friday, exposing the Bushes and whatnot.
Right.
I was wondering if you were knowing about what Pence and his brother and his dad, with all the environmental leaking and all the gas stations they've owned, and
that's right, they owned a chain of convenience store gas stations called Country Road that went bankrupt shortly after Pence became governor. His brother was running it, and this was the same time that Pence was arguing in an editorial in the Indiana newspapers in 2000, that tobacco does not cause cancer. Tobacco and gasoline were his major profit centers.
Okay.
But you're saying his gas stations were leaking into the ground, and he left behind an environmental mess?
Exactly.
Huh.
So aren't they being sued at all, or?
I'm sorry, say that again, Bill.
Aren't they being sued at all, or?
I don't know. That's why I put out the call. You know, if you know of any reason, you know, that Pence could be held to account, you know, in a way that might be impeachable, I'd love to hear about it. I'll have to look into that. Bill, I don't know right off the top of my head, but thank you for the call. John in Kansas City. Hey, John, we just have a minute to the break. What's up?
Okay, quickly, Tom. I truly believe that if everything comes to fruition, like I obviously know, we just got to get to it. I can't understand. Please explain to me how anything that Trump has passed, be it Supreme Court nominations, EPA regulations, I look at this as these are Putin-suggested regulations, and basically there's nothing. Everything that he has done should be rolled back.
Yeah.
This is right.
I agree. You can't. I don't see a mechanism for rolling back. I mean, I think that if he's convicted of these crimes, and it's obvious that the only reason he's president is because of a fraud, if Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh have any ounce of integrity, they will simply resign their positions, because they're there as a result of fraud as well. But in terms of rolling things back, President Pelosi could roll back all those regulatory changes in one week. I mean, it would not be that big a deal. John, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.